everybody. I'm so happy to see this room so full for Trevor. And I'm very excited to hear what he has to say. I listened to him a few times before, heard him speak. I was so amazed, so I said, I'll have to get him over here. For over 30 years, Trevor has researched radical left, Marxist and terrorist movements and their covert influence on mainstream politics. His thesis is that what is commonly regarded as mainstream political policy is in fact driven and guided by hidden subversive elements. The Democratic Party's consistent defunding of the US military, Islamic refugee resettlements, pipeline shutdowns, and the push for illegal alien amnesty are all consistent with far-left and Islamic agendas. Trevor believes that these forces must be exposed and countered as America's continued role as a bastion of freedom is pivotal for the future of Western civilization. His research has given him unique insights into how extensively communist parties have been able to manipulate and even control policy formation in many Western countries, particularly their main enemy, the United States of America. His research shows that this is a very grave and looming threat which will not only impact America's national security, but her survival. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome Trevor up here, and he will be ready for book signings afterwards. So on your way out, make sure you stop by. Thanks.
Thanks, Regina. Well, thank you very much, Regina, and thanks to the club for inviting me here today. You've got an amazing town here and a fantastic setting. If it wasn't for the Democrats, you'd be living in paradise here. Seriously, what? Now, I want to start with a little story. I was down in Los Angeles, and I love street food, so I walk up to a vendor. I gave him some money, he gave me the food. And he said, you have an accent. Where are you from? I said, well, I'm from New Zealand. He said, well, where's that? So to make it really easy for him, I said, look, it's down near Australia. He said, where Arnold Schwarzenegger comes from. Which explains the voting patterns in Los Angeles, does it not? But people always ask me, I've probably spoken to 400 groups all over your wonderful country, and people always ask me, you know, why as a New Zealander should I care about America? Why should I care about what happens here? And I say there are two reasons. The first is simple gratitude. My country was facing invasion during World War II by the Imperial Japanese Army. And if it hadn't been for the huge sacrifice of your fathers and uncles and grandfathers at the battles of Guadalcanal and the Coral Sea and Midway, we would have been done, folks. And that's a very strong memory even today. The second reason is related, but it's a little more selfish. Ronald Reagan had it right. This is the last best hope for mankind. If freedom should ever fail in the United States, if you should ever lose your constitution, your liberty, your economic dynamism, and your military superiority, all of which took a huge trashing through the Obama years, had that continued, folks, we would eventually be living in a world run out of Moscow and Beijing and Tehran and Havana. And is that the kind of world you'd like to leave to your children and grandchildren, folks? No. So anybody who cares about freedom, anybody who cares about liberty has to care about America. This is the front line now. Now, I want to say a few things about the 2016 election. Not so many about the 2018, more about the 2016. Now, does anybody in the room believe there may have been a touch of the miraculous on that election? Just a little, okay? Because they all knew that Hillary was predestined to win, right? It was all over bar the shouting. But it didn't turn out that way. And unfortunately, I think some of our people, some of our grassroots activists, sort of thought, well, Trump's in office now, I can have a holiday, it's all under control. Well, I see that election not as saving America, but as giving America one last shot. A stay of execution. because America had been drifting into socialism for 100 years and was about to go off the cliff. And had it not been for President Trump, it would have. But if you look at the Old Testament, there was a lot of time when the Israelites were behaving badly and they would get a second chance. But how many times did they get a third chance, people? So we're on our second chance and we better make really, really good use of it, because we may not get another. Second thing I'll say about the election. Does anybody know which state in the union contributed more to Trump's victory than any other? Any guesses? Some say Wisconsin, Florida, Michigan. Well, I'll tell you who it was. It was California, people. Now, I've got a very good friend, and he may speak to you at this group at some point, a man called Malcolm McGough. And he's a former Australian Army officer who now lives in California. And it really pains me, I've got to tell you, deeply pains me to give an Australian credit for anything. But I have to, right? Because Malcolm was was a leader of the Trump team in this state, and he had 300,000 volunteers in this state. They had 10,000 on the phone banks at any given evening. And 5 weeks before the election, they were told to put their focus on five states only: Florida, Arizona, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Michigan. And they were told they had to win every one of them. And when they protested about Michigan, they said, "No, you gotta win Michigan." And you know what? They did. Those five states were won by the volunteers from California, people. President Trump would not be in the White House today without California. I understand San Francisco, I understand Los Angeles, but I know in the heartland of California, you've got more patriots and more constitutionalists here than any other state. And America depends on you to do it again, folks. So please, if you've got a holiday booked anytime next year, cancel it. Serious, this is so important. And dedicate yourself to doing everything you can. Two things. You've got to win back those 7 seats the Democrats stole in the last election. And you've got to help President Trump win in the states where they need you to help, where they need the manpower. If you do that phone banking and that kind of thing, you can save America a second time, ladies and gentlemen. And I think that's a noble enterprise. The third thing I'll say, a little more cynical, the Germans have this wonderful phrase, you will know this, Regina, Schadenfreude. It means to take pleasure in the pain of others. And it's not something you boast about, right? It's not a noble sort of characteristic. But I'm sure you all watched the election on 2016. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, they panned the Democratic Party headquarters in New York. And when you saw all those little snowflakes bawling their eyes out and hugging each other, did you feel a little bit of Schadenfreude? Maybe even a lot. And do you think after 8 years of Obama trashing your country, do you think you deserved it? Yes. I think so. Now, my main focus is national security, because you've got nothing if you cannot defend your country, folks. I know there are people in this room who have fled to America for refuge because of what happened in their own home country. You know, I was in Miami the other week and I was with Cubans and Venezuelans and Nicaraguans, and they were all there because America had given them refuge when the communists took their country down. So, but I focus on the aspect of it that's not often discussed. Now, I'm sure there are people in this room who have taken that famous military oath. I promise to defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic, right? Now, which is more dangerous, an enemy over there in a uniform with a gun pointed at you, or an enemy wearing a suit and tie in your Congress, trashing your constitution every chance they get? The one here, the internal enemy. Now, has anybody in the room ever had to undergo any form of FBI background check or security clearance for a government job or even a private position? So I'm looking around, probably a fifth of the room, maybe a quarter of the room. Is it true that those background checks can be pretty darn rigorous? They go and interview your childhood friends, maybe interview your pastor. They check out your financial situation, overseas travel, criminal convictions, the whole lot. Because they understand that one traitor can cost you a battle. One traitor can cost you a war. One traitor can cost you your freedom. They need to understand that anybody's working for the federal government and the leadership of the free world has to be a trustworthy person. Very important. But what if you're a young Marxist radical who hangs around with the local Communist Party, someone like Nancy Pelosi, someone like Barbara Lee, someone like Dianne Feinstein, who hangs around with the Communists, is intimately involved with the Communists, but then gets elected to Congress, where they may serve on the Homeland Security Committee, or the Armed Services Committee, or even the Intelligence Committee of the House of Representatives. How much of an FBI background check do those people undergo, folks? Zero. Nothing at all, even to serve on the Intelligence Committee. Do you think maybe your enemies might be aware of this fact? You think the Cubans know about this, or the Iranians, or the Chinese, or the Russians? Do you think they have any understanding of this? You think maybe they might even try and exploit it? You think they'll be stupid enough not to? So, I'll give you, but this couldn't happen, right? Because, you have a Federal Bureau of Investigation, which is charged with keeping radicals and traitors and communists and Islamists out of your government, right? They would never allow subversive into your government. You saw how rigorously they attacked Hillary Clinton and exposed her high crimes and treasons. They knew that Hillary Clinton could be their boss, people. Do you think they're going to bite the hand that feeds them? So what about, does anybody know which committee in Congress, the most powerful committee in your Congress, oversees the FBI? No, the Judiciary Committee. The Judiciary Committee oversees the FBI and the Justice Department. The FBI is supposed to catch the bad guys and the Justice Department is supposed to prosecute them. Though that has been going a little bit awry in the last couple of years, has it not? So, but if you look at the composition of the Justice Department, now over the last 40 years, the Democrats held the House way more than the Republicans, up until the last 10 years or so. And so the chairman of the Judiciary Committee for about 30 years out of his 140-year service in Congress, a man called John Conyers from Michigan, was the chairman of that committee for decades. He is the man who abolished your House Un-American Activities Committee, for instance, one of your last lines of defense against subversion. And John Conyers would be one of the most dangerous members of Congress you have ever had, one of the most treacherous. John Conyers had a 50-year history with the Communist Party USA. His father was involved before him. He was a founder member of Democratic Socialists of America, Ocasio-Cortez, which is actually more left-wing than the Communist Party. He was actively involved for many years with the Workers' World Party, which supports North Korea and Cuba and Iran. And he was a big time supporter of several Muslim Brotherhood front groups. Now, if you're not sure who the Muslim Brotherhood is, they started out in Egypt in the late 1920s with the idea of re-establishing the Ottoman Empire. They wanted world Islam. And they worked with the Nazis during World War II. And when the Nazis were defeated, they worked with the KGB, which taught them their trade craft, how to infiltrate. They are the father of ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and Hamas. Yet, and they are banned in Saudi Arabia and Egypt. But in America, they work openly and legally through the Council on American Islamic Relations, Muslim Student Association, and many other groups. And when some of your Republican congressmen tried legitimately to get the Muslim Brotherhood named as an officially designated terrorist organization, John Conyers, and he's in my movie, I hope you get a copy, gets up and says, "Oh no, no, these are good guys now. They've given up violence. They're a peaceful social service agency. We should work with them, not against them." John Conyers was a hardcore anti-American Marxist Leninist. As hardcore as you can get, folks. Yet for 40 years, he oversaw the FBI. Now, who else was on that Judiciary Committee? Until recently, there was a man called Luis Gutierrez from Illinois. Now, he was a member, a leader of the pro-Cuban Marxist-Leninist Puerto Rican Socialist Party. Big-time Communist Party supporter and actively involved with several Muslim Brotherhood front groups. You also have a woman out of the San Gabriel Valley called Judy Chu, who now serves on that committee. Judy Chu was an active supporter for many years and still is of the Communist Workers' Party, the most militant pro-Chinese communist group in the country. She goes to China on a regular basis to build business ties between China and California and is described in the Chinese press as China's best friend in your Congress. And you should see Judy Chu go off on the FBI whenever they have the temerity to arrest one of the more than 25,000 Chinese spies currently working in this country. "You are racist," she says. "The FBI is a racist organization. You're only persecuting these people because you hate Asians." And she has arranged for sensitivity training for these cruel FBI agents so they don't persecute these poor Chinese spies. Now, Sean Hannity has been going off recently because you've got a socialist in Congress, Ocasio-Cortez, a member of Democratic Socialists of America, pushing her Green New Deal, Medicare for all Marxist programs, all Democratic Socialists of America programs, and he's right to get upset about that. But you have the head of the Judiciary Committee now, a man called Jerry Nadler from New York. The man who wants to impeach your president. He has been an active member of Democratic Socialists of America since at least 1977, people. He is a full-blown Marxist, yet he heads the Judiciary Committee. What do you think is going to happen if the FBI comes to the Judiciary Committee and says, "Hey, Mr. Nadler, hey, Mrs. Chu, we think there's some Congress members that need investigation. Is that okay? Can we have some money? And by the way, you are on the list. Is that all right?" What do you think's going to happen to their budget next year, folks? You think they're stupid enough to bite the hand that feeds them? The FBI has not investigated congressmen since at least World War II, and probably never. I'll give you a couple more examples. Again, he's in my movie. There's a man called Andre Carson from Indiana, one of your three Muslim members of Congress, very actively involved with Marxist groups, very active with several Muslim Brotherhood front groups. Now he is, I've got him on tape, on video, at a Muslim Brotherhood front group convention in Connecticut in 2012. He gets up in front of the audience and says this, "Hey people, I understand, I've been told there are people in the audience undercover. They are spying on our meeting. They believe we are here plotting to destroy this country. Well, I say to you undercover operatives, I say to you spies, Allah will not allow you to stop us." This man serves on the Intelligence Committee of the House of Representatives. He oversees the CIA, the NSA, the FBI, DEA, you name it. There are at least four Marxists on that committee. There's at least five on the Armed Services Committee. There's at least four on the Justice Committee. Every one of your congressional committees is either led or has several Marxists in its leading composition. Every one of them. And I'll just give you one from the Senate. There's a woman from Wisconsin called Tammy Baldwin. Now, do you have a drug problem in California at all? Do you have any illegal drugs here? Like, you know, a little bit. And I'm not just talking marijuana. I'm talking, you know, fentanyl, opioids. You know, the opioids, fentanyl comes from China. And they killed 60,000 Americans in the last 2 years. That's more than they killed in the Vietnam War, people. You know, Trump's right to be hard on China, folks, because they are at war with you now. They are deliberately shipping fentanyl to your kids to kill them and make a lot of money in the process and corrupt your law enforcement with it, corrupt your society. But the cocaine largely comes from Colombia, and it was shipped through Venezuela, and that was organized by Hugo Chavez. The communists have always been involved in the drug trade. The Cubans, the Chinese, they've all made huge amounts of money pushing drugs to your kids. But anyway, the source of most of that cocaine is Colombia. And one of the major producers is the FARC, the Colombian Terrorist Guerrillas. Marxist terrorists have been fighting a war against your ally, Colombia, for 50 years now. They call them narco-terrorists because they make their money selling cocaine to your kids. Now, in Madison, Wisconsin, there is a support group for the Colombian Revolutionary Movement. It's called the Colombian Support Network. And one of its key members, been active for more than 20 years now, is a woman called Tammy Baldwin, your senator. And she has been down to Colombia on more than one occasion to meet with the revolutionaries. She has her staff helping the Colombia Support Network, and she has used her connections and she's used her time in your Congress on several occasions to try and get US military aid cut off to the Colombian government so the communists have a greater chance of taking over that country. This woman is in your Senate, people, right now, basically helping the enemies of this country kill thousands of Americans every year. You have got at least 100 members of your House, including 2/3 of the California delegation, and over 25 senators, Dianne Feinstein is a given, who are so enmeshed in neo-communism, Muslim Brotherhood fronts, or are working with the Cubans, Iranians, or the Chinese, that they couldn't pass a background check to drive a school bus. They couldn't clean the toilets at any military base in your country. Yet they are running every congressional committee and have people on every Senate committee right now. Right now. And of the five leading... Well, I'll go into that later. So, is anybody... So that's one of the major threats you face. And the other one, I'll tell you real simple. And it's a big problem in this country, but most people don't see it as a national security threat or a communist issue. But it is. It is illegal immigration. That is what could destroy you more surely than anything else, and it's 16 months away from possible implementation. Now, do a little bit of math. Mitt Romney lost his election in 2012 by 2.5 million votes. Donald Trump won in 2016 by about 400,000 votes, I believe, thanks to the wisdom of your founding fathers and the Electoral College, and actually lost the popular vote by nearly 3 million. Now, according to Massachusetts Institute of Technology, there are 22 million illegals in the country right now. Some people say it's more like 40, 45 million. But let's just say 22 million. That's a reputable organization. Now, if those people are given citizenship and voting rights, as Hillary Clinton promised to do within 100 days of taking office, if they are given citizenship and voting rights, what proportion of them do you think will be Democrat voters?
All of them.
Let's just say 80%, be conservative. That would give the Democrats 15, 16 million new voters overnight, people. Instantly, you'll lose North Carolina, Florida, Georgia, Arizona, and probably Texas. You tell me how you ever elect another Republican president from that point onwards. Ever. People, on election night 2016, you were that close. You were that close to losing this country. And I still don't think many on our side quite understand the ramifications of this issue. It's absolutely vital. And it's completely 100% Marxist driven. 100%. Now, has anybody noticed a little bit of vitriol and hatred directed towards your president? You've seen a little bit? Like, did Reagan get this much? Did George Bush too get this much? So why do you think they hate him so much, folks? Well, I think there are two reasons. The first is, you know, it's very easy to understand. You know, on election night 2016, they're so fired up and believing their own propaganda, so certain of victory, they thought, like a bunch of kids who are going to get the biggest bike you've ever seen for Christmas, and they got a pair of socks. And we all know that feeling, right? But usually you get over the bitterness in a year or two, don't you? You know, you get over it. But they're not. The real reason is this. The left understands it is him or them. He survives or they do. It ain't gonna be both. Right? That's what it comes down to. Because, see, if you're a modern Democrat, you're all about identity politics. You own the black population. You own a big chunk of the Asian American population. You own the Latinos, the soccer moms, the millennials, the Native Americans. You own them. And you add those groups up till you get 51%, and that's how you win. So when President Trump goes to the black communities and says, hey guys, so this is what your inner cities look like with Democrat rulership. You know, crime, poverty, drugs, unemployment. Why don't you vote for me? What do you got to lose? And a whole bunch of them said, heck yeah. Trump won Michigan because instead of 96% of the black population voting Democrat, only 92% did. He is now around 25% popularity in the black community. You have not seen that since Abraham Lincoln, people. And this is freaking the Democrats out. Because if they lose only 10% of the black population, they cannot win elections. They're in huge trouble. Trump has increased his popularity in Texas with Latinos more than 25% since the election. And when you talk about those white union guys out of Pennsylvania and Ohio, the ones who voted Democrat since Adam was a cowboy, you know, they... For the first time in their lives, he came out to them and said, look guys, I see your areas. Where's all these high-paying union jobs? Where's all these factories and steel mills you used to have out here? Is this what voting Democrat and NAFTA has done for you? Well, you cannot defend your country without an industrial base. We're going to rebuild the industry in the Midwest. And for the first time in their lives, a whole bunch of those white union guys went down to the polling booth and they ticked the box for a Republican. First time. And the Democrats understand that if Trump gets a border wall built, if a whole bunch of the illegals have to go home, they're done. And the black population crosses, they are done. They're out of office maybe for 20, 30 years, folks. But they have a plan, an evil plan, okay? And it was hatched not very far from here. Who remembers the old Rainbow Coalition of the 1980s? Okay, that was Jesse Jackson, ran twice for president, once in 84, once in 88, and he got 7 million votes and second in the Democratic primary. It surprised a lot of people. Because what he did... He got all the progressive whites, progressive blacks, progressive Asians, progressive Native Americans, progressive gays, progressive environmentalists, the red stripe, the green stripe, the yellow stripe, and he had a rainbow coalition. Now that coalition as I said, got him 7 million votes. But in those days, minorities were 12% of the population. Now they're 38%. His idea was before its time. Now, the Rainbow Coalition was completely run by Maoist communists, mainly from the League of Revolutionary Struggle. One of them, a young man called Stephen Phillips, young black law student from Stanford, a leader of the Rainbow Coalition, married into a very wealthy San Francisco family, the Sandlers from Golden West Savings and Loan. They sold out $26 billion to Wachovia. They pocketed a profit of $2.6 billion and they bought half of it into the progressive movement, the Democratic Party and the left. And Steve Phillips tells them where to put it. Now, Steve Phillips has written a book. It's called Brown is the New White, and it is the Bible for the Democratic Party. And he argues very simply, Democrats, it's a New York Times bestseller endorsed by Pelosi and Obama. He argues very simply, Democrats, forget about the middle. Don't waste hundreds of millions of dollars trying to get 2% of the vote to go your way. There are millions of voters in the southern and southwestern states, mainly black and Latino, who are Democrats but don't vote. That's where you put your money. You put massive amounts of money into Texas and Florida and Georgia and Arizona and North Carolina. And that's what they're doing, people. That's how they almost won with the Marxist Andrew Gillum for the governorship of Florida and almost won with Stacey Abrams in Georgia. And they did win with the Marxist Kyrsten Sinema, who's now the Democratic senator from Arizona. So in 2020, they're going to run the Rainbow Coalition strategy. It's all going to be about race and minorities. They're targeting the young and people of colour. Now, how does Bernie Sanders fit in that scenario? How does Joe Biden fit in that scenario? So that leaves basically Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren. Well, they're both women, which they want, so it's going to be one of them. But being 1,024th Cherokee isn't quite as good as being half Indian and half black. So I would believe, I'm telling you, it's going to be Kamala Harris, and you see if I'm right, because Kamala Harris is a Steve Phillips protege. Her sister was a Marxist radical with Steve Phillips at Stanford. Her father was an openly Marxist professor. Her mother was a Black Panther supporter, and her husband, at Steve Phillips's recommendation, became number three in the Justice Department under Eric Holder. Steve Phillips is backing her to the hilt, and I believe she will come through. The plan is to run a progressive candidate of colour, do massive voter registration drives in the southern and southwestern states, and win with 51, 52, 53% of the vote. Then they legalise every single illegal immigrant in the country. Then they basically do what they want forever and a day. Does that sound plausible or does that sound crazy? So you just follow the news. Google the phrase new progressive majority. That's what it's all about. Now, so this is where we're at. If we do not use this God-given opportunity we've been given, and we lose the next election, we are in for a world of grief like you've never seen, ladies and gentlemen. But if we win, and we absolutely can win this, this is what could happen. You will see an economic boom like you've never seen before, because a whole bunch of the checkbooks come out immediately that Trump got elected. We saw massive investment in the economy. But now it's slowing down because they're thinking, well, what if he loses? Am I really going to build that new factory and have Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren tax me out of existence? Or am I going to sit on my money? When Trump wins again, you'll see investment like you've never, ever seen before, both from here and overseas. We have a border wall built. We'll be on control of immigration so that the demand for labour will be higher, but the supply of illegal labour will be way lower, which will drive American wages through the roof. You will see a whole bunch of unconstitutional laws overturned. you'll see taxes continue to come down and actually eventually getting on top of deficit spending and getting the economy under control. All of which will be great news for America and for the free world. You will spark liberty revolutions not just here, but you will inspire others all over the world. But one thing we must never forget about, probably one of the most important thing of all, President Trump has done more to put genuine conservatives and constitutionalists into the court system in this country than any other president. Even the Ninth Circuit is now almost conservative. Right? Almost. It's going to have massive ramifications in the future. Massive. But think about this. President Trump gets another term. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is getting pretty old, people. And her health is not that great. And she has said publicly she would love to come and retire in New Zealand. Okay? She said it. Well, I'm willing to take one for the team, folks. Okay? I'll suck it up. She can come down to New Zealand. She can play bingo all day long. And you will have a 6-3 majority on the Supreme Court. Imagine what that's going to do for your religious liberties, for your First Amendment rights, your Second Amendment rights. You'll be able to strike down unconstitutional government departments, like the Education Department, for instance. You'll be able to take all these cases and get all this, the huge federal government that has been put in place by 60 years of bad court decisions. You can start whittling it away, folks, and have a free America again. Is that pie in the sky, or is that possible? So what I'm saying, ladies and gentlemen, is this. I know what you do. I know the checks you write, the doors you knock on. I know everything you do for your country because you love your country and you love your children and your grandchildren. That's why you do it. So this is what's going to happen, folks. I can't promise you much, but I can promise you two things. If we blow this opportunity, your beloved children and grandchildren will live in a horrible country, folks. That's the reality. But if we give it everything we have, everything that's within us, for our God, our Constitution, and our family, two things may happen. Conceivably, we may give it everything we've got, and maybe, possibly, we still lose. But at least you will all earn the right to look your children in the eye and say, I did everything I possibly could for you. And what is that worth to you, folks? And if you win, and you absolutely can win this, because that last election proved to me beyond all doubt that God is not finished with this country yet, folks. If you win this, you'll spark a liberty boom like you've never seen before. You will spark an economic revival like you've never seen before. But most of all, and most important to me, and I suspect you, you will give your children and your grandchildren the opportunity to live in not just the amazing country that you inherited, but one even greater. Is that worth fighting for, ladies and gentlemen? So I say to you folks, thank you so much for what you do for liberty, for America, and for my country. God bless America, God bless California, and God bless the GOP. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you.